Paris has the Eiffel Tower, Rome has the Colosseum, Geneva has the Jet d'Eau, and Athens has the Parthenon. Iconic buildings that define place, set the scene. Location, location, location. On that day, the day we read about, St. Paul stands in the shadow of the Parthenon, staring down at him, idolatry, bold, brash and huge, surely indomitable, in face of this new sad little sect whose funny little doctrines this funny little man is presuming to propound, in the presence of the intellectuals, wits and sages of the ancient city of Athens. So pathetic, it's laughable. You may see the Parthenon 100 times in 100 illustrations or movies, but the magic and magnificence of it does not in any degree disappoint. The sheer artistry and genius that underpin its construction mean that many centuries later, basking as it does in the warm, soft sunlight, it can still silence the visitor, who is compelled to bow to the genius of its construction, the timelessness of its aesthetic appeal. And here, of all places, in this centre of excellence and sophistication, St. Paul puts down a marker and alerts the world to the truth that something new is out there that offers a possibility even more enduring than this mighty monument to human ingenuity. That said, it seemed pretty much like the stupidest thing they'd ever heard. The whole scenario was high farce. This ugly little Jew telling them that their religious life was flawed by Zeus. Flawed by Zeus? Inadequate. And that some obscure artisan, some workman from a back street of Boston of a town had the answer to the meaning of life. In fact, was the answer. And wait for this. Having been crucified as a criminal, presumably of the worst kind, since they saved that particular barbarism for the scum, he was then, this workman, wait for it, raised from the dead. Excuse me, I don't think so. And apparently we're all now called to follow him, this Jewish carpenter, follow him, or miss out on the meaning of life for some such garbled nonsense. Really, it was the daftest thing they had heard in quite a while. On the face of it, they were right. Picture the scene under the overbearing shadow of the Parthenon, that fabulous temple built to house one of the wonders of the world, the massive gold statue raised to honour the goddess Athena, who would protect, they believed, the great city of Athens. Under the brooding majesty of this glorious golden monument, so huge it could be seen glinting in the sunlight from 6 miles out at sea. Dwarfed by its frowning grandeur, this bent little man declared his gospel and insisted that, well-intentioned and spiritually attuned, though the citizens of Athens might be, they were wide, wide of the mark if they put their trust in the gods of their tradition. There was only one God, and Jesus of Nazareth had come to make him known. That truth, claimed this hunched, intense little man, meant the end of Athena and the whole panoply of the gods. He turns and points. One day, all of this magnificence would come crashing down, and the tourists would walk among the truncated pillars and stroll among the rubble. That would be all that would remain. It really was the stupidest notion ever. How they laughed. When you walk through the ruins of the Parthenon, that iconic landmark that says Athens, you can see the rocky outcrop where Paul stood that day and declared his audacious, challenging message, dared the intellectuals and the philosophers to consider another kind of wisdom, a bigger truth, one that stood in stark contradiction to the current attitudes and the prevailing culture. The echoes of our own times are hard to miss. The Athenians were religious, very religious, in a way that people today claim to be spiritual, very spiritual. Indeed, this is the mystery the church keeps trying to address, how to connect the inherent spirituality of individuals out there with a committed Christ-centred faith proclaimed and lived within the life of the church. People insist that we acknowledge their spirituality and see it as a spirituality that unfortunately finds organized religion more often a barrier than a help in the development of their inner life. The Epicureans and the Stoics, whose brands of religion and philosophy Paul presumed to question, demonstrated that vague, undefined spiritual sense, the voice within that is heard, the awareness of the more than ourselves that is recognized. The desire not to engage with too much passion with any particular creed or brand of religious expression. It's all very personal. It's all about finding my way. It's not about commitment. Preferring to avoid identification with one of the particular expressions of religious life. And nothing too intrusive either, please. It tends to be a brand of spirituality that brings no demand with it, no real cost. And the last thing that anyone wants is a cross to carry. The church struggles to build on that recognition within people of the richness of their spiritual possibility, how to affirm and to harness those sensitivities and direct them towards the truth the church believes it has to share. All too easily, the "I am a spiritual person exploring my personal spiritual quest" can be an excuse to avoid the summons of God to loyalty and love towards him. And vague spirituality can be a useful place to hide from the call to commitment. Nonetheless, Paul is prepared, however, to start where the people are and deal with the realities of that. He uses their cultural images, the poets, the contexts in which the people live as the hooks on which he will hang his truth. And he finds within the common vocabulary of their need for religious ritual, their use of spiritual sounding language, places of connection, points of contact. He lives in the same world they inhabit and can draw from that, use that common cultural context to address the real concerns and the real issues of their experience. When we share the faith, when we try to share the faith, we can only begin where people are, rather than wait till they get to where we might like them to be. They come with all the accoutrements, all the baggage of 21st century thinking and aspiration, attitude and value systems. And though that may make us feel uncomfortable, and though that might require of us compromises that leave us feeling uneasy, we can only start where people are and respect their questions, address their issues. Sure, that can seem a little untidy sometimes, slack even, but just as Paul came into the debate from an angle, obliquely, from a tangent, so must we sometimes. If young people are genuinely concerned about the environment, about issues of social and economic justice, about the nature of relationships, if these are the issues that agitate and excite them, we need to be aware enough of that and sensitive enough to it to be able to translate our faith into a language that addresses the questions they are asking, rather than inviting them to consider questions we might think matter, but which they would never feel the need to ask. So what are our poets saying? Whether these are songwriters, opinion formers, movie makers? What pain is being addressed in the cultural marketplace today? And to what extent do we make sure that we in the churches are not operating on some kind of parallel universe where we agonise over things that are of no concern to the people we hope to win to the faith? When the General Assembly meets next week, it will have to struggle and sweat over matters of significance and bearing in the life of the people of Scotland and beyond, whose spirituality and whose need should be our focus. There will need to be compassion and intellectual rigour, there usually is, hard questions addressed and humility shown, always underpinned by the profound conviction that the message of the church, the gospel of Jesus Christ, is as needed, as true and as powerful today as it has ever been. Make no mistake, there is nothing wrong with the message. The message is the word of life still. It is still life-changing and can stop a man, a woman in their tracks with its call, its summons, and its invitation. That said, twist and turn and translate all you like, the Christian message is always going to be a scandal, a threat and a challenge to the complacencies and the priorities, the lazy thinking of a society that has deliberately distanced itself from the things of God and is acutely uncomfortable with the tough challenges of faith. In Athens, they could not stomach the simple truth that Paul outlined. The fact that faith in Jesus Christ is at once so easy and at the same time so difficult. Paul did not bring abstruse intellectual argument, just the old, old story of faith in Jesus Christ and his unchanging grace. They were looking for something a bit more complex, something a little more intellectually stretching. Paul had nothing to offer them but Jesus crucified and raised. There you are. And in that recipe for life and salvation, there is no room for intellectual ego stroking, no place for pride or elitism. The invitation to turn away from the religious props and the philosophical illusions that had been sustaining them and instead meet face on the summons to faith was not palatable then any more than it is palatable now. Hence the similar nature of the responses to Paul's preaching. Instant dismissal. Some simply didn't want to know. It was too silly, too unsettling, too simplistic. Not interested, thank you. The second kind of response was interest. Those who wanted to know more, the genuine seekers after truth, who refused to take the discourteous and dishonest road of brushing the whole possibility of new truth aside, they would go looking. They would really listen. Demonstrate a fair-mindedness that offered real possibilities. Others still chose to believe, to follow and embrace the new way. The book of Acts describes how some of them began their pilgrim journey. They would still have questions. They would be involved in a growing thing, a learning thing, a faith that deepened and matured with the years, but they were on board. They had chosen, still allowing the unknowns and the questions, but beginning the walk with Christ, learning the story from the inside alongside others. Flights to Athens from Geneva go most days. A few hours and you're there. A bus from the airport, and before you know it, there you stand, where Paul stood, in the shade of the Parthenon. It's a bit of a truism, but only because it's actually true. The centuries may roll, but people are still pretty much people. Same kinds of needs and vulnerabilities, the same sorts of pressures and pretensions. Amazingly, the gospel of Jesus Christ is just the same as it has always been, a call, a summons, a challenge to an individual to follow him, to put their faith in Jesus Christ as the hope, the answer, and the joy, the way, the truth, the life. Of course we will work hard to learn how the world thinks. We will be sensitive in how we deal with the issues people are struggling with, and we will be faithful to the gospel, scandalous as it is. The gospel that can transform, heal and save, now as then, here as there, for the citizens of first century Athens, and for us now.